Sometimes I just sit at home in the den and watch TV, butt naked. It's my TV and it's my den. I ain't got to put on no clothes if I don't feel like it.
With a long, successful comedy career, some may call him a legend, but he'd rather you didn't.
I'm fine with the exception of you calling me a legend. Legends usually have about 6 months to live.
He's clearly put in the work for success, and you won't hear him complaining about it.
I've never really, to be honest with you, considered it a struggle. You gotta enjoy the struggle. You gotta enjoy the journey.
Actor, comedian, Uncle Elroy, DC Curry, now on
The Pulse.
Guys, welcome to another episode of The Pulse. Get a chance to talk to people who are doing big things, making a difference, touring, making people laugh, and maybe, like, I don't know if we can say you're involved in the controversy, peripherally involved in the fact that everybody in comedy is involved in controversy. A legend of comedy, Don DC Curry. How are you, sir?
I'm fine with the exception of you calling me a legend. Legends usually have about 6 months to live.
Oh. All right, well, we don't want to do that. We're not going to put that on you. We will just say a successful, I mean, what can I say? Trailblazer, you know, somebody who continues to do it. Like, what's the acceptable title?
I appreciate whatever you call me, man. Whatever you call me, I'm sure I've been called worse, so it's all good.
Well, look, you weren't not in the last couple of weeks or months. Like, let's pause that for a minute. We'll get to that. We'll talk about you before we talk about how everybody else has been called worse in the last couple of months. So I was reading about your background. We do that a little research before talking to people. How did you get started in comedy? You got an interesting background, you know, with pastor father and the like.
Yeah, I had a brief minor league baseball career, and it was in 80, 81, and at that time, it was like the disco era, roll your sleeves up and down. So when we were on the road and my teammates after games or in between nights of games, they would go to dance clubs. But I never was a big dancer, you know. So I would find a little comedy club wherever we were, and I would go in. And usually it would be an off night, like open mic night. And I just enjoyed watching the comics, particularly those that were not professionals. And I enjoyed watching, kind of got to be a critic. And when I got released from playing baseball, I went into a club one night and they were out of participants. And so I looked around and nobody knows me. I can't embarrass myself. And I went up and that was 11,000 and 16 shows ago.
So you're there as a baseball player in the crowd hanging out, and they're like, we need some more comics, and you say, oh, all right, I got this. Like, you have to understand, people who would do that are wired a little bit different.
Well, this was after my career was over. I was done playing baseball, so I was I was really in midair, like, you know, now what am I gonna do?
So I just jump on stage.
I went up and it was fun to me because I didn't take myself seriously. I watched beginning comics, you know, be all torn up about how the show went, but I was just having fun, man.
So at that point, so your father was a pastor, baseball player, but there's not a history of comedian, is there? Like, what made you think I've got what it takes to go up there and be a comedian?
No, I came from a line of preachers, man. My grandfather was a preacher and pastored some churches. My father, he's retired now from pastoring, but he's 99 and still does some preaching, you know. But you got to kind of watch him because at 99, you know, he has a very thin filter.
Okay.
But so, he's actually humorous, man.
So you got that part, the thin filter. You got that part naturally.
Yeah, I pretty much speak my mind. I will say this, as far as speaking and engaging as a public speaker, they're fairly similar occupations.
Being a pastor and a comedian?
Yes.
Okay, and not just a pastor and a comedian, a pastor and a, you know, Uncle Elroy, like, not necessarily, you know, not afraid of using words and expression kind of comedian.
Well, I'm actually referring to more of the speaking and engaging people than I am the material, you know.
So you weren't scared. You already had the comfort level of kind of just expressing yourself.
I would say that's correct. Yeah, I'm not afraid. No. Yeah.
So before the open mics and stuff, were you the funny guy in school? Were you I'm trying to figure out if the next time I'm at a bar or an open mic and somebody says we need some comedians, do I have in me to do that? So how did you know?
Yeah, go right ahead, man. I was never, and I've been asked that question often, was I a class clown? No, I would say I was more of a practical joker, you know. You know, I would pull practical jokes and then sit back and just observe what happened, you know, and that was fun to me, you know, but never known for my commentary.
Okay, so then I should go ahead and give it a go. Like, no, don't be scared.
Yeah, have at it, man. Come on, you're a pro, man.
Whatever. Mess around and come to your show, and you'll be like, bring this fool up here right now. I'm staying away from that.
Now, comedy critics can be very cruel, so... you know, don't have your feelings on your sleeve there, but, you know, it's not personal, man.
So you get up there, you get started, you said you enjoyed the feeling of going out there and just giving it a shot. Then you start getting gigs. Now, I read, and this is about the struggle is real, right? This is when I'm testing whether or not all the stuff you read and research is true. So you got a gig, you went out there and ended up owing them money on the bar tab after your performances.
That's exactly true, man. One of my first gigs, I was at a comedy club. I was opening for Paul Mooney.
Okay.
Who became one of my confidants, you know. And we did 14 shows that week. I was supposed to get $70.
For all 14 shows?
Yes, sir. $5 a show. Hey, Bill. And I was excited, too. And at the end of the week, they handed me a bill for the liquor I had consumed.
Wait.
Which was more than $70.
Well, in 14 days?
No, we were doing two shows a night and some nights three.
Okay, so even a week, I mean, it's not hard to drink $70 in a week.
All right, I wasn't intoxicated or anything. I was having, you know, a couple of drinks a show, you know.
So getting paid $5 a show at the end of the week, and you're opening with Paul Mooney, who is a name, like that's somebody who's doing things. How does that conversation go down when somebody comes to you? Like, all right, man, thank you. Good shows. Good job. Here's what you owe us.
Right. Well, let me just let me be friendly to your viewers and say I still owe them that money.
All right. No, that's good. I actually I think all of our viewers will respect that answer, because I think that's an answer all of us would have been like, wait, what? Like, I owe you money?
Yeah, now you use your imagination on what I actually said, but that was the gist of it.
Is that real kind of struggle? I remember you hear these types of stories. We had some of the guys from New Edition on, and they were talking about going on tour and playing these packed houses and all of these things. And then the tour bus after the tour dropped them back off in the projects. I mean, it's funny now because they've been able to achieve and come back from that. Is that one aspect of this business and the struggle, particularly for African-American entertainers, that people just didn't understand?
Well, I've never really, to be honest with you, considered it a struggle. Now, I was employed, you know. I was a contractor for a while, you know, a general contractor. But in the words of my grandfather, you got to enjoy the struggle. You got to enjoy the journey. And I've never been one to just be mad. I've always thought it was kind of just a life gift to be able to do it. Even though, you know, I wasn't making substantial money, any money I got in the beginning, I thought it was just a blessing, you know. And I kept working. When younger comics, even today, ask me when should they leave their jobs? And my answer is, if you have to ask that, right. It ain't time.
Right.
But as a side job, you can do very well, and then you still have your other options at hand with a regular job. But when it gets to the point that you need to leave your job, you will know. It'll be obvious you can't do them both, and it doesn't make sense for you to still be working another job.
That's like the saying, when you go into certain stores, if you have to ask how much it costs, you probably can't afford it.
Exactly. So I've never considered it a struggle, you know. I will say this, at the risk of being taken as an angry old man, which I'm not, I will say I think the new wave of social media has taken away some of the experiences that I think would make the young comics better presenters of their commentary, I guess is a way to say it.
Because why? Because they don't have to grind, because they can immediately reach large groups of people through social media, or they can just stay at arm's length. Why is that a problem?
I think they don't gain the road experience that's necessary, driving from city to city and talking to the variety of people that you will ultimately come in contact with. So you can go on social media and you can do a skit or what have you 100 times and pick the best one. Mm. But nothing replaces, to me, the actual experience of going up in front of people on a regular basis that you do not know, and sometimes in areas that you have never been. So it forces you, for one, to develop quote-unquote universal material.
Again, doing the research. So another true story, you got booed off stage because you only had one set prepared and did it twice because you needed that money.
Yeah. Actually, I didn't get booed off stage. They tried, but I refused to leave. But, you know, in those days, there weren't a lot of comedy clubs that were open, you know, to different veins of people. So a lot of times we'd go to discos or bars, man, and they would have the music playing, and then they just shut the music off. We got a comedian tonight. So you were kind of a caricature, you know. But I had done several comedy clubs. So when this club called me and they said they wanted to do two shows, you know, I jumped on it. You know, it was the first night I ever made $1,000. But I didn't know that it was going to be two shows to the same people. I thought they would put the people out. At that time, I mean, I only had 20 minutes of material. And so when I went to the dressing room after the first show, which was good, but the second show, I came out of the dressing room and I started recognizing people that I had seen at the first show. And I was like, uh-oh. So I went up and I said, well, I'll just go up here and do everything backwards. And it was a disaster, man. But I refused to leave. I stayed up there 20 minutes. I was like, I'm not going nowhere.
I got to get that second check.
Yeah, get that second check. And it was funny. There were two of us that night. And we were both in the same boat. It was Bruce, and myself.
And both only had one set prepared?
Both of them. We didn't have an hour between the two of us, man.
So these are the stories that prepare you to be able to go out there and handle anything.
Oh, yeah, you know. I mean, after a while, you know, you kind of find your place and you get the hang of it, and then it becomes a lot easier.
When you come from, and you're telling the stories, but obviously you've got, you know, several years, decades of success in comedy from those early stories, and you've got some characters. I was, you know, joking about Uncle Elroy when we were talking before. There's people who seem to fall into two categories, particularly when I'm talking to actors and comedians. There's either people who are just like, I'm all in on Uncle Elroy. Uncle Elroy got me paid. And then there's others who are like, can I live? Why you keep calling me this one character? Which one are you?
I appreciate the opportunity to have been that. I'm not under any kind of fake belief that I'm a bona fide actor. I enjoyed the role. Ice Cube put me on. I enjoyed it. And, you know, I was on Grace Under Fire for a year and Tracy Morgan show. I mean, but no, mention of the character does not upset me. You know, I used to tour with, I'm not getting messy, Bill. But I used to tour with, sometimes with Ricky Smiley, and he would get very upset when people referred to him as one of his comedic characters, Lil Daryl.
Really?
And I mean, you know, if that's how they know you, that's how they know you, bro.
I think it's better that people know you, right? Like, regardless of why they know you for something positive, that was a character.
Particularly when you're a stand-up, because you have a chance on a nightly basis to defend yourself or explain yourself what happened.
So I'm going to use that as the segue into what we were talking about earlier, the concept of defending yourself or talking about, because you were on tour with Ricky Smiley. Now, you've done the different shows with people that you mentioned. You were in the movie with Cat Williams. And I don't know, do you guys have a relationship outside of the movie?
Yeah, I know Cat.
So y'all are cool?
Yeah.
And you must be cool, because you're the one comedian on earth who he didn't mention, at least in a negative way, in that whole viral expression. I understand that it wasn't you. I'm going to pause for a second because the internet is strategically getting challenged again. All right, I paused for a second because I was trying to see if Cat pulled the plug on your internet.
I was going to say that's Cat probably.
So you saw it, you and 30 some odd million other people saw Cat Williams do this interview on the Shannon Sharpe podcast where he went after pretty much everybody. And again, Cat's trying to pull the plug on the internet. Listen, it froze on a smile, so we'll take that. All right, so I think we're good again. Let's give it a shot. Your feelings after you saw, because you know a lot of these people, and you know Cat Williams, and he went off on everybody. What was your reaction?
I think some of it was true. I think all of it was entertaining. And I think some of it is sad. I was kind of saddened because historically, comics, you know, we've always had beef, some of us, with each other, but never publicly, you know.
Okay.
That part kind of saddened me, you know, that we're all in the same game, so to speak, as comics. You want to go to a broader realm as entertainers. So that part kind of saddened me. Some of the criticisms, personality-wise, that he stated are true. Some of his testimony, I think, was ridiculous. To say you read 3,000 books a year is kind of ridiculous. That's 9 books a day. So, you know, but I've never, some of the stuff he said, some of the people I've talked to have really taken offense to it. I've never taken myself that seriously, man. But there is a line that can be crossed where it becomes personal. And I think in some cases, he did that. Was it a marketing ingenious move? Well, you mentioned 30-something million. I saw yesterday it was up to 50 million.
Wow.
Hits.
Wow. So, and that's the other side of it. Like, that is that you talked about the social media era and what have you. And watching it, I don't know Cat Williams. I've never interviewed Cat Williams. I'm pretty sure I don't want to be on his bad side after seeing all that. So, Cat, you know, it's all love. You're welcome on the Pulse anytime you want to come. But some of that stuff you looked at and you went, wow. Like, if this was about marketing, you start going into essentially accusing people of crimes and throwing that kind of stuff out there. That part was when you watch it and kind of cringe. But as you said, 50 million views made a whole bunch of money for both him and Shannon Sharpe. You know, so in the business, does that justify the means?
Well, and I'm not just saying this, man. People have suggested that I do different things along the way, but I never got into stand-up with the mindset I want to be rich or famous, man. I thought I had something significant to say in a humorous way. And that's always been my approach. So when people tell me, you know, DC, if you would do this or that, and it's something that goes against my character or goes against what I basically believe in, I mean, I'm not dying to be rich. I'm okay. I've made a living 44 years. I've been performing.
Yeah.
I'm okay, but I will not. And if you've seen me, you're probably gonna ask something about this statement, but I will not just say anything just for publicity or what have you. And if you've seen my shows, you're probably saying, well, I can't imagine what you will not say, but anyway.
That's fair.
So I won't say or do anything just to be famous. It's just not my style. You know?
Have you had no behind the scenes conversations, but you said some people took that very personally. If you had been included in the attack, would you, and he said it's just expression, not attack, it was rebuttal. Would you have taken that stuff personally?
I doubt it. No.
Okay, so you just let it go.
No, I wouldn't say that. I would have a rebuttal, and you know, he may or may not like my rebuttal, you know, but you know, as we cookie crumble, brother.
All right.
But no, I would not I wouldn't lose any sleep over it, but I would not ignore it either.
Interesting. We want to talk about your shows. I saw one person that was Mike Epps' response was, he's like, he wished his name had been mentioned more. Like, he's trying to sell tickets and keep investing in communities. He did. He said, "Cat, man, we work together. You can't come after me a little bit. Like, I'm trying to get my name out there.
Right. Give me some publicity, man." I tell you this, he has generated a conversation. While I don't believe he necessarily reads 3,000 books a year, he's and I'm speaking to Cat now, he's no dummy.
Yeah, well, clearly, yeah, that part is clear. Were you, generally speaking, because I've had Cedric the Entertainer was on with us, Michael Blackson was on with us, we not since then, but we've had them on, and they did a lot of talking about that kind of comedy fraternity. And as you said, the people who are may not particularly care for each other, but that's family fighting, in-house fighting, or debate and discussion. Does that fraternity kind of exist where, for the most part, you guys are kind of pulling for each other because of similar experiences? Or is there a lot of this, "Yo, you stole my joke"?
Well, it's never been as obvious as it is now, but you know, I've said about joke stealing, and a lot of comics now have come out and said that they have stolen. I've never knowingly used anybody else's joke. But now there is some material that's stock. I mean, some things happen every comic thing. And then someone takes it and uses it. And uses it. Usually, internet connection unstable. Usually, it's the new guys who are not familiar with the game yet using the older guy stuff. However, I have seen blatant, outright joke thievery. It has not affected me that much personally, because I generally do current events. So I keep it moving. So sure, I've had some of my material stolen, you know, but stuff that I was doing about OJ 15 years ago, you know, I could care less about you stealing that.
I got two more questions. I appreciate you spending this much time. We could do a whole podcast, your Disrace podcast. I encourage people to check it out. You get into all kinds of stuff. And they
Can I say something with that regard?
Please.
With regards to that?
Yeah.
Yeah, my podcast is Disrace. It's basically, and our motto is no hate, but no fear. Hmm. And basically it's a discussion about my people and how the news and current events affect us. So, of course, I talked about the Cat Williams incident, and then I brought on a person that totally disagrees with him, a former employee of his. Mm-hmm. And, oh man, I got some very hostile rebuttals, you know, for bringing her on. Now, I wasn't claiming sides either way, but she clearly had some firsthand knowledge, because she toured with Cat for a while and was, as I understand it, employed by him for a while. So I let her speak her piece. But anyway, the critics, my critics, are implying that I should not have allowed her a platform to speak her piece. And I just totally disagree with that.
That's interesting, because you got, you know, one person got a 50 million platform to talk about any and everybody, and now it is somehow wrong to allow people the opportunity to respond to it.
Right.
Like, that doesn't make a lot of sense. So your shows, you're coming to Philadelphia, you're touring, going different places, but you will be in our area in February, Helium Comedy Club, doing multiple shows per day, I'm assuming different material, you know, those different shows. Tell us what to expect from your tour.
My shows are considered by me to be a town meeting, you know. My overall view is I examine life as I see it from where I stand. Life in America, basically, as I see it. I like to refer to my shows as town meetings, man. Of course, I can't do the same show twice, but there will be some overlapping because I usually drive a point and... But it's about America and how I see America from where I stand. So you could ask, where do you stand? As what? Well, I'm a lot of things, you know. I'm black, obviously. I'm a man, obviously. I'm an American, you know. I'm a human being. So I'm a lot of things. So it's not a biased show in a degrading way, but it is my opinion from where I stand as a combination of all those different adjectives.
We encourage people to check it out. Helium Comedy Club, February 16th is when the shows start, and there's a weekend worth of shows that people can come and check out because, you know, you got to get the bag. You got to do multiple shows, you know, and that bar tab's got to get paid at the end of the weekend. Similar to the theme of your podcast, the theme of ours is use your voice for good. So we end every episode with the concept of use your voice for good, regardless of who we're talking to. What does that phrase mean to you?
Well, that means a lot, and God bless you. Now, I'm not trying to say I'm for lack of a better term, a goody-two-shoe. I mean, I am an entertainer. I'm an entertainer.
Yeah, we've met. Like, we've seen you. We get that part.
Yeah. I'm an entertainer. I guess that's the ultimate goal. But I do have my limits, my parameters, and I think. If you can be patient through some of my commentary, I think in the end, when I bring it all together, I think that some people have a change of heart, you know. But I'm not trying to save the world, Bill.
Okay. We will leave it there, even if you're helping out journey.
You're never satisfied with everybody, right?
Yeah, right. And you make yourself crazy trying.
There you go, man.
I appreciate you spending this much time with us. Thank you. We're looking forward to your show. We're going to check out your podcast, and we thank you.
Thank you, man. And to America, I'm proud of how far we've come, and I'm ashamed of how far we have to go.
Guys, thanks so much for listening to the Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast today with Don D.C. Curry, or Uncle Elroy, to people who are fans of the Friday franchise, as I am. Had a lot of fun with him. He's just real, just tells it as he sees it, is sharing his experiences, wants to make you laugh, but also wants to make you think. I appreciate that. I hope you did as well. I want to remind you that you can always go back and check out past episodes of The Pulse. We've had quite a few pretty cool guests that I'm sure you would enjoy going back and listening to or watching, depending on where you go and check it out. We also are on Fox Local now, so that's all connected TVs, Roku and Android and Apple TV and Amazon, you name it. It's there, and you can check out all of those past episodes. I'm sure you will enjoy. Hit me up on social media at BillAFox29. I love hearing from you, and I leave you today, as I always do, reminding you whenever you can, use your voice for good, and have a good one.